Hello and welcome to That's History, our regular segment where we look at current events and find echoes, parallels, and useful lessons from the past. I'm Chris Satula, and I'm joined as always by Jonathan Zimmerman, professor of history at New York University. Hi, Jonathan.
Good to be here as always.
So, Jonathan, it is, delicately put, the holiday season, and I sit here a Christian, you sit here a Jew. Would it be okay if I wished you Merry Christmas, or would that be a problem?
Well, look, people are divided on that. If you're asking me personally, I wouldn't have a problem with it because I think it's fair to say that Christmas is a national holiday. Obviously, it has religious roots, but it is an official federal holiday, and I'm an American.
Right. Now, that's a little nuanced situation that one confronts at this time of year, and people, as you mentioned, resolve it in different ways. Some go with the happy holidays or the more secular greetings. Some go ahead with Merry Christmas. For some people, the effort to navigate these waters of basically consideration for your fellow man amount to what is called a war on Christmas. And it is a meme that arises about every year at about this time.
Yeah, or even earlier. Really, with Thanksgiving, the war on Christmas begins. Or we should say, quote, war on Christmas, unquote. The war on Christmas is brought to us by a group of mostly Republican Americans who feel that the kind of political correctness that you're describing is actually taking away their celebration. So they're quite offended when schools get rid of holiday carols or Christmas trees. And they're especially offended when businesses in their own mercantile displays don't use the word Christmas, when they use the more generic or secular holiday language.
Now, I mean, I, as a practicing Christian, sometimes feel the effort to essentially strip religious imagery or allusion from all forms of secular life does go overboard, but I would never promote it to the level of a war. But this segment is called That's History. So let's look back in history. And one of the surprising things you have to tell us about is that the war on Christmas actually begins with the Pilgrims or the Puritans, and they were the ones conducting the war.
That's precisely right. I mean, the great irony of this story historically is the likes of Sarah Palin, who have weighed in on this recently, feel that there's a war on Christmas, but actually the white people who came to New England to found that part of British North America actually prohibited the celebration of Christmas. They were Orthodox, they were very devout Christians, and they felt that Christmas actually was, or the celebration of it, was a sinful or even satanic act. Remember, these are people that are coming to North America to purify religion of what they felt, frankly, were its Catholic or its unchristian elements, and create a society based solely on Scripture. And the Puritans like to point out that there's nothing in the Bible that says that Jesus was born on December 25th. And they would often say in their sermons, look, if the Lord wanted us to celebrate this holiday on December 25th, he would have told us when it is.
Right. Instead, you know, the date of Christmas is one of very many deft appropriations of pagan or native rituals by the Catholic Church as it spread and, you know, moved into new territories.
Precisely. So the Puritans weren't wrong about the pagan roots of Christmas, but it was precisely those pagan roots that made it sinful to them. And indeed, for a little over two decades, they banned the celebration of it.
Right. So the notion that the war of Christmas is somehow a violation of the Christian principles that founded this country becomes a little difficult to sustain.
Hugely problematic, given that the first Christians banned the mm-hmm. celebration of Christmas.
All right. So let's get into the 18th and the early 19th century. I mean, not all the colonies were founded by Puritans. Not all Americans were Puritans. What's happening with Christmas elsewhere?
Indeed. Well, look, a lot of Catholics come to the country, and just as in the case of Halloween, which we talked about a few episodes ago, that changes the score because Catholics are much more Christmas friendly. But then a lot of other things happen, one of which is that some of the rituals from Europe that involve very loud demonstrations and public rituals get imported here, especially the one that today we called caroling, but back then was sometimes called things like wassailing. And that has roots in the Middle Ages when peasants would go to the house of the Lord and bang pots and pans and make lots of noise and sing and demand food and drink. They were rituals of what the anthropologists call inversion. challenges to the order. And of course, the Puritans themselves are trying to create a hugely ordered society, and this is the antithesis of that. To this day, I should tell you that on December 25th in the United Kingdom, the officers serve the enlisted men on December 25th, which I think is really fascinating. Again, repeating that ritual of inversion.
So for a time in colonial, revolutionary, and early America, Christmas is almost an outdoor event before it moves indoors.
It's hugely outdoored and, again, hugely disordered. In cities like our own in Philadelphia, you see big gangs of what at the time would be called roughnecks or toughs. And they would get really drunk, make all kinds of noise, often get arrested. And it's because of that that in the 1830s and 40s, we see a project to domesticate Christmas. And the key, let's just say, weapon in that project is indeed St. Nicholas or Santa Claus.
Right. So St. Nicholas, who's actually a real church father from, I believe, the 5th or 6th century A.D.
Turkish even.
Yeah, St. Yeah. Nicholas of Cusa. But his big moment, he's ready for his close-up right about 1820, 1830.
Yeah, that's – I mean, what we think is that well-to-do people in cities like New York kind of reinvigorate Santa Claus. He had very ambiguous Dutch roots at the time. I mean, the Dutch had a figure, and I can't pronounce it, but it sounded like Santa Claus. But a kind of minor figure that in New York, possibly because of its own Dutch heritage, the gentry of the town reinvent him, reinvigorate him, and try to use him to move Christmas indoors, move it into the nuclear family.
And so that might be where the whole he knows whether you've been naughty or nice thing comes from, because he's sort of a gentle disciplinary agent.
Absolutely. And remember, this is the time when we're creating a new middle class family. The family had formerly been a place where goods were produced, you know, candles and cloth and all that. And as the Industrial Revolution kicks in and those goods are made elsewhere, the family becomes a place that makes people, that makes human beings. And presents are going to be a part of creating this new familial ethos. And they're going to have a huge emotional burden as well, because now we're making the family into a place that makes human beings, that creates love, and presents are going to be an expression of that.
All right, so let's move to the other side, the far side of the Civil War in the 1860s and 1870s, and enter another revolutionary institution, the department store, and to wit, one called Macy's.
Oh, yes. And, you know, Macy's would, you know, stay open till December 24th at midnight, and the other department stores did too. Some of them started guaranteeing same-day delivery the next day, that on Christmas Day itself, because presents became the heart of Christmas. I mean, it's interesting that when this started, there were a lot of objectors. As presents start to kick in as really the heart of Christmas, there's a critique at the same time. So if you look at, say, Harriet Beecher Stowe, who we know is the author of Uncle Tom's Cabin, before she wrote that, she wrote a Christmas story in which the heroine or the character, who's really Harriet Beecher Stowe, bemoans the growth of presents, says in my day, which for her would have been 1820 or so, if you got a piece of candy, you were happy. But now everybody's got to buy presents, everybody's got to receive them. And she goes on to say, and we don't need them.
And another one of the holiday traditions that develops around this time, and one that I have to admit as a former newspaper writer I have indulged in, is the great tradition of the newspaper editorial complaining about the commercialization of Christmas. And you dug up a great example of this. This is from a New York paper in 1894. As soon as the Thanksgiving turkey is eaten, the great question of buying Christmas presents begins to take the terrifying shape it has come to assume in recent years. I love that, the terrifying shape. So not much has changed.
No, but it is terrifying precisely because so much is riding on it. Your familial and your love relations are, in a sense, depending on it.
A good portion of the vitality of the local economy and the future bank accounts of a lot of retailers as well.
Indeed.
Does anything change much in the 20th century? That editorial makes it sound like we're pretty much stuck, even in the 21st century, where we've been for about 130 years.
I would say, if anything, it's gotten way more commercial. And there are a lot of reasons for that, including changes in the retail industry. But I would say a big part of it is actually the harnessing or the employment of Thanksgiving as a part of this whole what I would call present production. So it is in Philadelphia, actually, in 1920 that there's the first Thanksgiving Day parade, and it is sponsored, yes, by Gimbel's. It's led by Santa Claus, and at the end of the parade, Santa Claus gets to Gimbel, and he goes on a ladder up to the second floor to where the toy department is.
There you go. And the phrase Black Friday for the day after Thanksgiving, also invented in Philadelphia by the Philadelphia police to describe not so much that they were in the black, but that it was kind of a grim day for them at work because there were so many angry people out there running around trying to shop.
Indeed, and fighting each other and all that.
So what are your plans for the holiday, Jonathan Zimmerman?
Well, my plans for the holiday are interesting because even though, as you mentioned, I'm a member of the Jewish faith, I'm married into the Christian faith. And so our family is one of those millions of American families that do them both. And we'll be going to my wife's family to celebrate the other one.
Well, a most American story of the holiday season. I'm Chris Satul. This is Jonathan Zimmerman of New York University. Thanks as always, Jonathan.
Thanks. It was fun.